It's Wednesday and time for our weekly discussion of state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is Seth Tupper, reporter for the Rapid City Journal. And Seth, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us on the line is Denise Ross, editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. And Denise, thanks for talking with us today.
Good to be with you, Carl.
Well, about an hour ago at a press conference, U.S. Attorney Brendan Johnson announced his plans to resign and open an office in Sioux Falls for a private law firm. Some Democrats had wanted him to run for the Senate seat held by his father, Tim Johnson, who retired in January at the end of his term. Seth, does his resignation now start the speculation that he'll run for office?
Well, absolutely. And I don't think he did anything to tamp that down today. He conducted a press conference in Sioux Falls, and they broadcast that live in the Pier and Rapid City prosecutor offices, U.S. attorney offices, and I attended the Rapid City gathering here. When he was asked about whether he'll run for office, he continued to say what he usually says, which is that as U.S. attorney, he doesn't he likes to keep politics out of the office, and he doesn't talk about it. But the way he phrased it was interesting. He said something along the lines of he's refrained usually from talking about, quote, my political future, end quote. And you know, you hear things like that. Certainly sounds like he thinks he has a political future. And the way things are all aligning, it you would certainly have to think that he's headed toward that, stepping away now with some time to think about it, to start making contacts, to raise money, et cetera. And, you know, being the only real big name Democrat out there who is known to have, you know, some high political, or speculated at least, to have some high political ambitions. You would certainly think that, you know, that's what everybody's expecting. And it was one of the first few questions that came up at the press conference. Everybody was thinking it. So I would say, yes, the debate about what he'll run for and when he might run will begin.
Well, Denise Ross, if this is just the first step to running for office, why would he resign at this point?
You know, I'm not sure about his timing other than, you know, I had a chance to talk with him yesterday, actually. He reached out to me on a text to say, I want to make sure you have my phone number, which I have had. And when I called him, he said, well, this is going to be my only number going forward. And he said that he and the North Dakota U.S. attorney had worked out a deal with this law firm to expand into the areas where these guys have developed expertise as U.S. attorneys. And so I think it's just the fact that this opportunity came together at this time. But obviously, as Seth said, everybody's thinking, okay, what does this mean going forward? Then this frees him up, takes off the, you know, sort of the gag order that you have as U.S. attorney where you can't talk about politics. Now he will be able to. I think, you know, between him and Stephanie Hursa-Sandlin, then this whole debate is going to get going again about which office should each of them run for, and how does that all work out? So I think it's going to be kind of an exciting time for the Democratic Party in South Dakota, which, you, as we all know, has had kind of a rough run with some bright spots, but overall they've been having some difficulty.
Well, Seth, looking ahead to 2016, 2018, and beyond, what offices are available for Brendan Johnson to seek?
Well, you'd have to think you know, that he'd be interested in a national office. You've got Kristi Noem, the U.S. House seat is up for election every 2 years, so that'll be up again in 2016. You know, there's been some speculation that maybe she would want to run for governor in 2018, that Noem would want to do that. If that's the case, you know, you have to ask, okay, will she run for re-election to the House in 2016, or would she step away to prepare for a run for governor? So there's some possibilities there. I mean, you know, Brendan Johnson, perhaps he would challenge Kristi Noem for the House seat. If she were to step away, of course, that would be very attractive for him then, you would think. You know, farther out, you know, you've got the possibility of John Thune. I mean, as we've seen, he's got, I think it's $9 million in his campaign account now. I can't envision that anybody would step up to challenge him. It'd be almost an insurmountable hill to climb, but you never know. So you would think that perhaps the U.S. House would be where maybe he would look to jump in, but I don't know. That's what everybody's going to speculate about today.
Yeah, Denise Ross, your speculation. I think the U.S. House, that's the most likely place he'd begin.
You know, again, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but that seems like the lowest hanging fruit that's out there. there's also speculation that, and I think at this point it's getting later and later for him, but that John Thune might be interested in a presidential run in 2016 or possibly a vice presidential, you know, appointment or chosen to be on the ticket. And that would definitely shake things up, although we've seen what the legislature's been doing to repeal the law that they passed to keep Tom Daschle from running for both Senate and a national ticket. So Thune, it looks like he will have the opportunity to run for both offices if it comes to that. But I think it would be an easier run for a Democrat to go against him if he were on a national ticket, because now obviously they have some arguments to make about, you know, where Thune's loyalties lie and where his ambitions lie.
Well, Seth, is it at all possible that maybe he really isn't interested in running at all?
Well, of course, that's possible. And I think, you know, what's interesting about him is it must have been really tempting to run for the Senate seat that his dad vacated. I mean, you know, there's an open Senate seat, you know, no Republican incumbent. It was his dad's seat. He didn't run for that. And, you know, so, you know, what do you take from that? Maybe he's really disciplined about he's got to pick the right time to run. I suppose it's possible. If you're going to have that attitude that, you know, you only want to run when everything's in order and it looks like you can win in South Dakota as a Democrat, you know, will that time ever come, the perfect time? So I suppose it's possible if he, you know, you have to think he has some ambitions. Again, just some of the, you know, being from a political family and some of the things he said and the encouragement he's getting to run. But if he sits on the sidelines and waits for that perfect opportunity, then I suppose it would be possible that that would never come. I was going to add, you know, about the Senate race, one of the clearest signs today that he's being viewed as a legit candidate and a possible threat to Republicans is the National Republican Senate Committee has already put out two press releases today critical of Brendan Johnson, which I thought was interesting. So in that way, their campaign against him has already begun, whatever he chooses to run for.
Well, Denise Ross, in looking at a candidate's chances or plans to run, how much does timing play into all that?
Oh, you know, timing is everything. That's always the case in politics. You look back on any number of South Dakota events that have taken place over the last decade, and there's so much timing that figures into it. And Brendan, speaking of timing, I mean, we've been talking about him as a potential statewide political candidate for over 10 years. So maybe the time has finally come where we will see him actually enter a race and get into something. But I think he's been very careful. I mean, he could have run sooner, and he hasn't yet. So I think we have to kind of assume that he's got a plan for his own life. You know, he's got children. He's got a family, and they're not all grown. So that's a big factor for anybody. And so I just assume, and I haven't talked to him about this, but that he's kind of had a plan in his mind about when he will be ready to enter. And he's young, you know. He's got lots of time to choose his right time.
Well, the successor to Brendan Johnson's dad in the Senate, Republican Senator Mike Rounds, was in South Dakota this week and at a Rapid City press conference earlier this week. He said that the Hot Springs VA Medical Center would be a good place for treatment of PTSD, and there's been news that the VA wants to close the Hot Springs facility and move its services to Rapid City. Seth Tupper, will Rounds' idea have any impact on whether Hot Springs is closed or not?
I don't know if that particular idea will have any impact. That's an idea that has been out there. I know, Larry Pressler floated it when he was running against Rounds in the Senate race. That why don't we make this a national center for the treatment of PTSD? Other people have talked about that as well. But what I will say is, if you know, all the Rounds and everybody else has been critical of the VA for basically giving signals that they've already made their decision. That even though there's a process going forward and the preparation of environmental impact statements and all that kind of thing, that basically they're just going through the motions and they're gonna do what they want to do anyway. So with that being the case, if the congressional delegation can somehow stop the VA or alter its plans or keep some kind of significant presence in Hot Springs, that will be a true testament to their power and their ability to get things done in Washington. And, you know, if they don't, I'm not sure what that means because, again, there's been a lot of allegations that this process has been, you know, decided and is kind of a foregone conclusion already anyway. But, of course, Senator Rounds and everybody and the other two members of the delegation, want to appear and that they're doing as much as they can to help their constituents in Hot Springs. And so, of course, they'll continue to do what they can. But we'll see. Like I said, it seems like there is a plan in place and there is study, but people are pretty skeptical of whether anything can change at this point.
Denise Rost, is that the way it looks to you, that this is a done deal?
You know, I am not sure about that. I attended the congressional field hearing that Kristi Noem held back last year, and I was not expecting when I walked into the Mueller Center. It was this big auditorium, and it was absolutely packed with people, standing room only. I mean, there must have been a couple thousand people that turned out for that. It looked like the whole town of Hot Springs was there, quite honestly, and the passions were really high. And that includes Congresswoman Noem, who called for the resignation of the head of the VA facility down there in Hot Springs, which then that did come to pass. I got the sense there that things might still be not completely set in stone. I don't know how much the delegation can press upon the administration to change their opinion or change their decision or change their trajectory. But it felt to me like things were still sort of fluid at that hearing, so I think we just have to wait and see.
Well, moving on to the state legislature, it's, I think, in its sixth week now, and yesterday state senators fell 3 votes short of increasing their annual salary from $6,000 to $10,000. The vote was 21-11, but the bill needed a two-thirds majority of 24 to pass. Seth, why did this bill fall a few votes short?
Well, I assume it's because anytime, you know, obviously elected officials are talking about raising their own pay, that's a dicey situation for them to have to answer to their constituents, people back home. And I would assume that some of the legislators, were a little skittish about that and got cold feet. And it's a delicate balance for them because I think anybody looks at it reasonably, you want to reimburse people fairly for the time that they commit to the job, but also you want to be responsible with the public dollars, and you don't want to, pay people more than what your constituents and the people of South Dakota would support. So, and they've seemed to be pretty good at that job over the years of finding that balance. And one thing I will say is, the whole argument that if you pay more, you'll get better candidates. I don't know about that. I think what keeps people from running for the legislature is the time and the cost of running in the first place, the time and the cost of being away from home for 3 months and going to peer. I mean, it's a major, major commitment. I don't know that, bumping a pay from $6,000 to $10,000 is suddenly going to make a whole bunch of people jump in and run that wouldn't have otherwise done it, because I don't think people do it for the money. So, I don't know. I'm sure that the proposal will come back, and maybe they just tried to take it a little bit too far this time, and maybe there's something more modest that they can hammer out.
Denise Ross, do you think, do you agree with Seth that increasing the salary probably wouldn't make any difference as far as getting more people to run for state legislature?
And by that amount, probably not a great deal of difference. But I do think, you just look at it objectively, the idea that I've heard floated this session is that they would make legislative pay just like the rest of state government pay, and the governor's salary and all the cabinet official salary and the judges and so on, where whatever pay raise the state employees get, the legislators also get. And that would sort of rid us of this perennial debate of how much legislators ought to be paid, and they can just get on the schedule of increases a little bit every year. I do think that, as far as I can recall, this is the closest they've ever come to getting something passed. I think back in the 90s, they bumped it up a little bit, like from, 4,000 to 6,000 or something, a pretty minuscule amount. But maybe the time has finally come where they need to bump it up again and then just get rid of the debate and let this be on autopilot for a while.
Guns are the focus of a few pieces of legislation. There's one measure that allows concealed carry without a permit, another that would allow concealed weapons in the state capitol. There's another proposal allowing students over 21 to carry concealed weapons on public university campuses. Seth, are gun bills just a part of the state legislature each year?
Well, they are recently. I think this all goes back to the Newtown school shootings and the Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut. As we all know, that was a major flashpoint in the national debate about guns and gun control. And right after that, we saw the school sentinel bill in South Dakota that was passed. I think that immediately that next session that allows school boards to hire somebody to patrol a school, take some training, and that somebody that's a non-police officer to be armed and there as a sentinel or to protect people in case a shooting would break out. And there's been some debate about that recently. At last I knew, nobody had actually used that program, but that kicked off. I think that event kicked off a fear on the part of people that are strong supporters of the Second Amendment that there was going to be a big rush to take away some Second Amendment rights, and they've gone on the offensive, and I think we're still seeing that happening right now, an effort to shore up some of those gun rights, Second Amendment rights, before they perceive that there could come before they'd be taken away. So I think that's still largely what's going on, and then of course here it's against the backdrop of the fact that gun rights is a big deal in South Dakota, and we have a lot of gun owners, and it's always on people's minds. But I think when they feel threatened, as they do now, it's further on their minds, and they're going on the offensive.
Denise Ross, what do you think happens with some of these bills?
Quite honestly, there's a little bit of a nuance on this gun issue in the state. It's going to depend on who's pushing for the legislation. You've got the NRA, which is obviously very pro-Second Amendment and pro-gun rights, but then you've got another group called the South Dakota Gun Owners, and they are even more so. They view themselves as even more assertive on promoting gun rights, and there has been a rift in the legislature, and I couldn't speak to the status of it these days, but certainly this goes back to before the Newtown shootings, when the South Dakota gun owners would bring a bill. That would almost be a sure sign of death, because the majority of the Republican Party, which is obviously the vast majority of the legislature, they weren't aligned with that. In fact, there was one hearing I was at where Matt Michaels, who was then, I think he was Speaker of the House, but he was definitely in the leadership. The gun owners came to testify in a committee. He turned his back on them and would not listen to what they had to say. He was very upset about a piece of literature they'd mailed out. And so the passions, again, on this issue run fairly high. So if it's South Dakota gun owners, I would say that's a mark against it at this point. And things may have shifted a little bit over time, but that you do see these guns go down, and I think that might be a big piece of why. It's depending on which group is pushing and who's mad at who over what different campaign tactics have been used.
Well, we're out of time, and that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. Denise, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
And Seth, thanks for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Seth Tupper is a reporter for the Rapid City Journal, and Denise Ross is editor of the Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. The Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday.